Hi, I'm Jeff Walters, and welcome to The Minutes. And thanks for listening today. It's great to have you along on The Minutes for the week of March the 10th, 2025. This is a City of Thunder Bay podcast. The Minutes takes a look at what happened at Thunder Bay City Council this past week. You can find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts, including our YouTube channel and our website, thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. On this episode, I'll have a rundown of what happened at this week's City Council meeting, as well an interview with Krista Power, the city clerk here in Thunder Bay. Council heard how there is a public survey available asking people about potential changes to how City Council operates or its governance. We'll hear about that process in just a few minutes. But first, though, Council got an update on Monday night on transit operator safety. The report summarizes safety-related incidents and negative interactions with bus drivers from 2022 through 2024. The data is compiled using incident reports filed by transit operators. The incidents are compiled into a few different categories, including acts of aggression, assault, bodily fluid, fare dispute, harassment, intoxication or unresponsive, and verbal altercation. The total number of staff-reported incidents or negative interactions that directly impact an operator have declined since 2022. A total of 275 issues were reported in 2022, 146 were reported in 2023, and 128 incidents reported in 2024. These figures are based on what was reported and may not reflect all of the issues that took place on transit buses throughout Thunder Bay during that time period. Over time, though, some of the issues being reported have changed. In 2022, the most common negative interactions included those that included intoxication and/or unresponsiveness, verbal altercations, fare disputes, harassment, and acts of aggression. As of the end of 2024, the number of reported acts of aggression and verbal altercation incidents have remained relatively unchanged, but over the same year, 3-year period, the number of reported fare disputes, harassment, and intoxication-related incidents have decreased. Transit says there has been progress in implementing items that protect drivers. For example, all staff went through de-escalation training in the first quarter of 2024. The training focused on operators managing conflict, reducing tension, and safely handling challenging interactions with passengers. This led to improved safety and customer service. Internal staff now deliver the program, which has led to a noticeable reduction in conflict between drivers and the public, particularly when it comes to fare disputes. As of February 1st of this year, all buses now have a new electronic fare management system, or the Lift Pass. The new system will create electronic transfers and printed transfers, and is expected to reduce the number of disputes between passengers and operators over a transfer being valid or not. The electronic fare management system also led to new fare boxes being installed, and new permanent driver safety shields also going ahead. The new shields will replace the current ones, with installation expected to be complete by the end of this year. Transit also says in the report that it is also restructuring its frontline supervisor roles, and this should lead to better on-road supervision and an expansion of the dispatch system into the evening, which gives operators and passengers better support. Transit also continues to work with the Operators Union, the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 966, to help improve safety and operational discussions and improvements. There will also be a focus this year on improving and promoting passenger conduct policies through the Canadian Urban Transit Association. The report says as the transit transformation continues over the next 3 years, driver safety and respectful behavior from all passengers will be a focus. One announcement. On Monday night, Councillor Brian Hamilton will host a McKellar Ward meeting. It will take place on April 16th at the Slovak Legion. It will start at 7 o'clock. Council gave the go-ahead on Monday night to apply for funding through the Federation of Canadian Municipalities for the Local Leadership for Climate Adaptation Climate Ready Plans. Administration wants to apply for the funding to update the city's climate adaptation strategy. The 2-year project would be eligible for up to $105,000 in funding, or 80% of the costs. To proceed with the next step of the application, Council needed to pass a resolution. The work includes taking lessons learned and best practices since the strategy was first created in 2015. Some of the lessons learned include a better understanding and actions to address the social impacts of climate change, recognition of the role that Thunder Bay plays as a regional hub when a disaster takes place, and more consideration of the disproportionate impacts that equity-deserving groups experience when it comes to climate change, the funding will allow for an updated strategy to be published. Council learned on Monday night about a public survey that is now available for the City Council Governance Review that's being led by the Clerk's Office. In 2024, administration was told to complete a review and create an updated procedural bylaw, which would allow Council to move from its current Committee of the Whole structure. Right now, Committee of the Whole structure is used to receive reports, debate topics, and make preliminary discussions on items that govern Thunder Bay. Those decisions made by the Committee of the Whole are then confirmed at City Council. The Clerk's Office is reviewing the model in place and developing a proposed process that would allow Committee of the Whole to be replaced with standing committees. The standing committee system would have a smaller group of elected officials sit on specific committees and focus their attention on specific city operations or departments. This review also includes a scan of the current framework of council advisory committees to determine if any changes are required to the number of committees, appointments to those groups, or the structure of those committees. City Council currently has over 15 council advisory committees, and there are a small number, though, of committees that are required by specific legislation. Members of council will receive an update, a detailed survey, and the city's executive leadership team will also be included in the review before any changes are proposed. City Council will receive its report on how its governance could be changed by the end of June of this year. The results of this survey will also be included in the report. Any changes made to the governance, meeting structure, and advisory committees needs the approval of City Council. During ratification of last week's Committee of the Whole minutes, Councillor Brian Hamilton put forward an amendment regarding the deferral of the Woodside Parkette lands. Council voted last week to defer the sale of the lands for 2 years. The proposed amendment was to change the date of the deferral from 2 years to 6 months. That amendment was defeated. The Woodside Parkette will be brought back to Council for a decision on being declared a surplus property in 2 years. And finally, Council passed a resolution that came forward from the City's Intergovernmental Affairs Committee. In early January, the committee discussed a resolution that came from the Town of Aurora, which asked the province to consider changing how it distributes the provincial land transfer tax and GST to municipalities for more sustainable infrastructure funding. The memo from the committee says that municipalities need more funding for critical infrastructure like roads, bridges, public transit, and water systems. Most of these items are currently funded through property taxes and user fees, but it isn't enough. The province collects the land transfer tax on property transactions, and the federal government collects GST on the same. These are significant revenues, but they are not shared with municipalities. Sending a portion of these taxes to municipalities would provide stable funding for local infrastructure, the memo says, while also supporting economic growth and enhancing the quality of life. Copies of the resolution will be sent to federal and provincial governments, along with the Federation of Canadian Municipalities, Association of Ontario Municipalities, and all of the 444 municipalities in Ontario. And that's a wrap as to what happened at Council this week. For more information on anything that happens at Council, please visit our website, thunderbay.ca/council. Committee of the Whole, City Council, advisory committees, and governance. You might have an idea of what they mean, but how do they all fit together to make the City of Thunder Bay function? Right now there's a review taking place as to how all of these pieces fit together and how they might work more efficiently in the future. Krista Power is the City Clerk and Director of Legislative Services in Thunder Bay. She is handling this overview of how Council operates. Krista, thanks for coming into the Minute Studio today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so some of these terms that I mentioned people might have never heard before, or maybe they really don't know what they mean. So let's kind of start there. Committee of the Whole and City Council. How are these groups different?
So it's a great question because people look at Committee of the Whole and City Council and it's the same people.
It is.
So the same 13 people make up Committee of the Whole that make up City Council. So Committee of the Whole is a body that makes recommendations. They don't make final decisions. So if you watch a City Council meeting, which is actually Committee of the Whole, you'll see them receive reports, presentations, deputations, all of the things they receive. The decisions are not final until a City Council meeting is held, and then they finalize those decisions.
And at Committee of the Whole, well, that's where most of the discussion takes place.
That's correct.
Okay, so what are they doing then actually at Council? If I guess all the the hard work is done, you could say, at Committee of the Whole, or the big job is done, why do we even have City Council?
City Council is required in order to make every decision by bylaw, which is required under the Municipal Act. So every decision they make, there needs to be a bylaw that authorizes that decision. So we bring those bylaws forward, either as a standalone bylaw or as a confirmatory bylaw, which confirms all of the decisions that they make at Committee of the Whole.
And Committee of the Whole is the more exciting one to watch, I guess you could say, right? When people think of City Council, they're not thinking actual City Council proper.
That's correct. I would say Committee of the Whole, is their meetings are longer. They have more discussion. They receive more items. If you look at a City Council meeting, they receive the minutes. They receive the minutes of other meetings, and those are confirmed, or the word we use is ratified, but it essentially means approved and finalized.
Okay. And as you said, we have to have that City Council structure. That's required.
Yes, that is required.
Okay. So how do they, they work together because one group, even though it's the same group, gets the decision, makes a decision, and then they confirm it, right? That's how they work together?
Yes.
Okay. So another part of this review that's going on is advisory committees. So how do advisory committees fit into all of this?
So some advisory committees are legislated. They're required by law. Two examples I would give you is the Accessibility Advisory Committee is required for a city of our size under the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. Also, the Community Safety and Wellbeing Committee is required by law, again, by legislation. So some committees are required. Other committees are council's choice. And council chooses to have committees that would allow them an opportunity to engage with citizens, to provide feedback, and to do work on specific files, specific matters in the community. So advisory committees really are about an opportunity for the community to engage, to participate in how City Council makes decisions. Every committee's minutes go to City Council for their information.
And as you said, a lot of these advisory committees are a choice of council, right? So they've
yes.
set these up. So why would they set them up?
So really, the feeling has been over the years that one of the best ways to engage with the community is to have a advisory group of people that are appointed by City Council to do specific work. So some examples of advisory committees we have the Anti-Racism and Inclusion Committee. We have the Heritage Advisory Committee. We have the Audit Committee, the Community Youth and Cultural Funding Committee. So all of these committees make up some of council's work, but they include people from the public, so citizen appointments. So you may be a teacher, a mom, a student getting involved in some of those committees because you have interest, and then you're providing feedback and input back to City Council.
Okay, so essentially they're taking their what they found, and they're taking that advice essentially.
Yes.
And are any of the committees, like, do they have binding recommendations? Like, if they come back, does council have to listen to what they say?
Most committees, quite honestly, it is up to council to make the final decision. So with the exception of committees like the Police Services Board, which again is a legislated committee, and outside of the jurisdiction of City Council, most committees, again, exist because City Council says they do, and City Council sets their what's called the terms of reference, so their objectives plan, and receives the information that they collect or discuss.
So we talk a lot about governance. That word is used a fair amount in the survey and what we're trying to figure out. So what exactly is governance?
So I would say for the general public, governance is really about the rules. And what I mean by that is the rules in the sense of how City Council makes decisions. 444 municipalities in Ontario, the Municipal Act, which is the guiding piece of legislation for cities, requires that every city council have a procedural bylaw. And that bylaw needs to stipulate when they meet, how they meet, are the doors to the meeting open or closed? How can the public engage in the meeting? What information do they receive? How do they make decisions? So the current procedural bylaw we have includes the construct of Committee of the Whole, which again is that meeting where those 13 members receive information, make decisions that aren't finalized. They are recommendations to themselves, City Council, for a further meeting for them to be confirmed by bylaw.
And I guess that's what's a little confusing here, is that we have this Committee of the Whole and City Council structure, and it's the exact same, right? Like, that's what makes this so confusing.
It looks the same. If you turned on the TV on a Monday night, you'd be hard pressed to determine if it's committee of the whole that's meeting or city council. I often say to the public, the best way you can determine is who the chair is. So if the mayor is the chair, that is a city council meeting.
Okay. Well, that's, I guess, a trick if you're tuning in on a Monday night. What are we looking to change? There's obviously, that's why we're doing this review, is we're potentially looking at changes. So what could come out of all of this?
So essentially right now we're looking at two things. So the first thing we're looking at is a standing committee structure. So that would be no more committee of the whole and standing committees that focus on specific areas, and there would be less members of council on them. So potentially five or six that would discuss and meet on certain areas. And we've looked at areas like planning and growth, quality of life, finance and administration. Those same members would meet, again, have those robust discussions to make recommendations to city council at a city council meeting, again, for those decisions to be finalized. On the committee piece, what we're looking at is, quite honestly, do we need all of the committees that we have? Do we need more? And should we make changes to the committees that we have? One of the things that we're looking at now and we're seeing across the province is a slight move away from committees to provide engagement that potentially has less barriers. So if you're a single mother in Thunder Bay who works 50 hours a week, do you have time to sit on a
right,
committee,
fair.
But you may have time to fill out a survey, to attend a focus group, to go to a ward meeting, to provide feedback in another way. So how can we ensure there are no barriers to participation? Is it simply committee structure, or is it committee structure and?
Okay. And when it comes to standing committees versus committee of the whole, what do other municipalities do?
Many municipalities use standing committees. And again, they use that construct in order to have that robust discussion. They also use it for the purpose of allowing those members to dig a little bit deeper into that subject matter and almost become experts and have a higher level of understanding of perhaps planning matters, or again, quality of life matters, finance matters. Ultimately, all of city council will be equally informed, as is, again, the construct in other municipalities. So there would be no, this group of council does more work than another group. They're all still making the final decision, but potentially there's efficiency in having a standing committee. We're also looking at, is there less barrier for participation? So right now, if you wanted to make a deputation, you're coming to council chambers, you're in front of 13 members of council, all of administration. How would you feel if there's five members of council you're presenting to? Do you see that as less of a barrier, and therefore would we see more engagement from our citizens?
Okay, that's fair. I was going to ask, what would the impact be on staff and council? Because for council, it sounds like they might have a couple less meetings to attend. They might be able to free up a bit of time there.
Yes, they may have a couple less meetings to attend, which quite honestly allows them more opportunity to connect with constituents. The other thing I would say that would be important for them is an opportunity to function in a different way, right? To work at that strategic level at city council, and then to be more engaged in the subject matter at a standing committee, should that be the decision they make to move forward with.
Yeah, and when and how will a decision on this be made?
So we will be bringing a report after we complete. We've done a scan analysis of all the municipalities that are comparable to Thunder Bay and the frameworks that they use. We're putting that data together now. We're seeking feedback from the public. We're also engaging specifically with members of City Council, and we're also engaging with administration, because this would be a process change to how they bring forward information and how they bring forward recommendations for final decision by council. So once all of that work is done, we will bring them a report before the end of June.
Okay, fair enough. And then last week, we need to separate these, because these are two very different things. There was a presentation on council composition.
Yes.
And there's always been lots of talk about council composition. So how is this different with what we're talking about this week? How is governance different than council composition?
So the governance review is really, again, about how city council makes decisions, what the rules are for their meetings. It doesn't touch at all on who sits on city council. The council composition review is, what does city council look like right now? 13 members, one mayor, five members at large, seven wards, one member elected per ward. What's been proposed by the council composition review committee is that changes, and that would change for 2026 to a model of four wards, two members per ward, two members at large, and one mayor. So how city council is made up, who sits at that table, is a completely different decision point for city council than their governance structure.
Okay, so it's two very different processes, but they just kind of happen to be taking place almost at the same time to some degree.
Yes, and I think one of the pieces that's important here is that one does somewhat inform the other. It helps us better understand who's sitting at the table, the work that they're doing, and whether there should be changes, again, to the number of people that sit around that table and the positions they hold. Also in how they make their decisions. Is there opportunities there for efficiency, for better engagement, for higher understanding from the public?
And again, council needs to approve any of these changes.
Yes. All of the decisions sit with council. So if they're going to make a change to their composition, so how many people they are and what positions they hold, they will have to make that decision and make that decision by bylaw in advance of the 2026 municipal election. And as well as the governance structure, how they meet, how they make decisions, they'd have to make a decision on that as well.
And what are the timelines for those, for council composition as well as for the governance changes?
So for the council composition, the committee is coming back on April 7th. So April 7th would be a decision point for council to say, are they interested in making this change? If they are interested in making the change to how they are made up, again, the number of people and the positions they hold, then they would direct me to write a bylaw in order to enact that change in advance of 2026. So that's the decision point at this point, is April for council composition. June would be the decision point for any changes to the governance structure, how they meet, how many committees we have, and how they function.
So we'll have a decision on one before the other. We'll definitely know the number of people and how the representation is taking place before we change the governance structure.
Yes, that's intended.
Okay. Krista, I appreciate you coming in today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is Krista Power. She is the City Clerk and Director of Legislative Services in Thunder Bay. She joined me today in the Minute Studio. And a big thanks for listening to The Minutes this week. Of course, if you want more information about City Council, agendas, or minutes, visit thunderbay.ca/council. If you want to listen to past episodes or maybe provide some feedback, visit thunderbay.ca/theminutes. You can also find The Minutes wherever you get your podcasts. Plus, you can find us on YouTube and on our website as well. That's thunderbay.ca/theminutes. If you want to keep your finger on the pulse of what's happening at City Hall, just hit that subscribe button. I'm Jeff Walters. Thanks for listening this week. We'll chat again next week. Get a great day.